During this hour, as most of you know, we've been studying the spiritual disciplines. These are habits of devotion, areas of the Christian life where you have responsibility to do something. There are things that God does entirely for us, but much of the Christian life, we're to live working diligently and at the same time trusting God to make it all work. And in those areas, we have to fix our attention some on our responsibility. It's not just to be passive and wait for God to do it, but we have some things to do. And so our overarching verse for the whole study has been 1 Timothy 4:7, discipline yourself for the purpose of godliness. Something you have to do, something every Christian has to do. And so the spiritual disciplines are the areas of life where you have that opportunity, things that you can work toward to be a more effective Christian, things that God does not do entirely for you, but that you have a part in. And so we've been thinking about those. We've already considered a lot of topics. We started with Bible intake, because that has to be the foundation. If we don't get our definitions from the Bible, everything else will be off. So we start with the Bible, take that into our lives through consistent discipline. Then we talked about prayer, worship, evangelism, service, and most recently we have been talking about stewardship. Now, in the Christian life, every Christian is responsible before God for how we do with the stuff and the money and the time and the energy and the talent that God gives us. We get all of these things from God. He is our provider of everything, our very lives, all of our strength, all of our intellectual abilities and talents, all of our time, all of that is from God. And so this is that area of responsibility that we have for someone else's stuff that generally comes under that heading of stewardship. It is more than money. It's all of those things that I just mentioned. God owns all of it. He owns you, and everything about your life touches on this topic of stewardship. But money is very important. It is a huge part of how we live our lives, particularly in this economy where everything is converted to money at some point. You know, we don't trade a chicken for what we want anymore. We don't bring a bushel of wheat to the store to swap it for the hardware we need for this project at home. You know, it's all converted to money. It's a big part of our lives. And it is an area in which a lot of people fail. And so the Bible has a lot to say about money, the stewardship of money, how Christians are to handle money. And then many of the lessons that we get from money also apply to time and talent and energy and every other resource that God puts into your life. If we get the money right, the rest of it often just falls into place easily. And so we're beginning with money, and we're thinking particularly about the stewardship of money. And so far, we've focused primarily on principles of stewardship, things like the fact that God owns it all, our attitude regarding that, whether we know that God owns it all. And then the other big one that we dealt with the very first day was the fact that there's more to stewardship than math. And we can get our attention fixed on the math, and we go, well, if I let go of this, I'll almost be out. And so we don't let go. But there is more to this than math, because God can always give you more. God gave you what you have. He can give you more. He blesses generosity, and he refuses to bless selfishness. And so we looked at Proverbs 11:25 that says, the generous man will be prosperous, and he who waters will himself be watered. God can give you more. We also looked at Malachi 3 just to see the principle there that God can rebuke the devourer too. You know, he can stop up the drain so it stops running out of your life so fast and give you more. So he has full power over what you have. There's much more to it than math, and the more to it than math is God himself. Last week we took a second look at this subject and again focused on some principles. If we squander the master's money, it's unjust. We looked at the story of the unrighteous steward in Luke 16. And that was the first lesson from that story. If you squander the master's money, that's bad. And he was a bad example, and it was kind of obvious in the story that he was that. And then we learn more positive lessons. Good stewardship requires foresight. If you're not planning ahead, you're never going to do very much. You have to be thinking about the future so that you don't spend it all on yourself. Good stewardship pursues rewards from the master. The unjust steward was pursuing rewards that would displease his master, apart from the master. And Jesus is encouraging us that he will reward us if we honor him. And so that's what good stewardship does. It's faithful in the little things. It produces spiritual blessings. He made an emphasis in that story about true riches as over against the wealth of the world. There's something more than what happens in this world, and that's what our master can give us. We notice that good stewardship brings ownership. When we get those rewards, they're ours. We're no longer managing that for somebody else. That's our reward. It's a gift to us from him. And then the overarching principle was that all of that, all of those positive things come from love for the master. That love is the real test. Jesus said you can't love both. You can't love God and money. And what you love is the real test. Now this morning I want to continue on this subject, and we'll get a little more into specific aspects of discipline from here forward, although there's still some principles that come in the texts that I have for you today. But discipline is necessary. Stewardship is a discipline of the spiritual life. It doesn't happen all by itself. You have to plan to do it, follow through, and do it. Something that every Christian has to initiate. If we just react to things that come up in life, good stewardship is not normally the result of that. Just reacting. So these foundational principles are necessary. People in false religions give money. You know, they often give a great deal of money. Sometimes it's staggering, the money that these false religions have. And so we have to have a biblical foundation. It's not just about giving money. That doesn't fix everything. Without the principles, it's just, you're just out of money. With the principles, God pours blessings into your life. So, assuming then that you've laid that biblical foundation and you've now determined to discipline yourself so that you don't spend it all on yourself, how is giving supposed to work in God's church? That's what I want to get into today. And let me begin by saying that giving is the way God provides within his church. Giving works in God's church. Giving is the way to do things in God's church. Free giving of God's people is the primary and normal means of supporting ministries all over the world. The giving of God's people as opposed to begging for money from people who are not in the church. That's what I mean, giving. The giving of God's people as opposed to business endeavors that attempt to get lost people to support the church. And giving as opposed to selling advertising by multiplying brass plaques and other gimmicks to get people to not give, but purchase that display. I've been fascinated over the years to see the creativity in churches in finding ways to raise money without Christians actually having to give. I started making a list, but then it depressed me and I deleted the whole thing. You can use your own imagination. That's not what we're here for today. But it is fascinating how committed churches have been to avoiding giving. And so I thought, well, I need to at least say that much. And yet the only method of supporting ministries that is normative in Scripture is, and I'm talking about ministries here, like churches, missionaries, the only method that is normative in Scripture is for believers who love these things to give their money without any strings attached because they want to give it, without any recognition in return, without receiving goods for it in return. That's normal. And I think you're going to see that in these passages that we look at today. They're talking about giving. a free will kind of giving. And since this text doesn't mention those other things that people do, it would be easy not to notice that they're not there. It's easy to forget that those avenues were open to the people in the first century. All that stuff that everybody does instead of give, they could have done that. They could have sold church bonds to raise the money that they needed. They could have had a bake sale. They could have done a church yard sale. They could have offered brass plaques for a certain amount of money. They could have had one of those trees like they have at the hospital where you buy your leaf and get your name put on it and put that in the foyer of the church. They could have done any of these things. They could have sold platinum memberships, gold memberships, and silver memberships, named buildings, entire buildings, after their rich members. But they didn't do any of that. And the absence of any of that stuff is very significant. And it's forgotten in churches. You know, it doesn't say don't do that. It's just that they didn't do that. They could have done it. And instead, they said, we want you to give whatever you want to. No strings, no pressure, no manipulation. Just if you're interested, you give. Here's the need. That's all they did. And you know what? It worked. And people gave, and there was enough. And that's how it still works. So as we think about this issue of stewardship today, we're going to look at a special offering that was taken up to meet a specific need in the first century. The need was in the church of Jerusalem. The offering was taken up around the world, except for Jerusalem. Turn with me to 1 Corinthians chapter 16, verses 1 through 4. First Corinthians 16, 1 through 4. The church already knows about this, and so the reference is, it's clear that they already know what he's talking about. He just mentions it, and then he gives them some details. Everybody had already been contacted. This is going around. The news is out. It says, beginning in verse 1, now concerning the collection for the saints, as I directed the churches of Galatia, so do you also. On the first day of the week, each one of you is to put aside and save, as he may prosper, so that no collections be made when I come. When I arrive, moreover, you may approve. Whomever you may approve, I will send them with letters to carry your gift to Jerusalem. And if it is fitting for me to go also, they will go with me. Now, Paul is talking about a special offering that was over and above whatever the church of Corinth had to have to exist. This wasn't, we're going to take this month's budget or this two-month period budget and not pay our bills and send this money to Jerusalem. This was over and above whatever else they already were doing and had to keep doing for things to work. This was a special offering. But the situation that called for this particular offering was this intense persecution that was going on all over the world, and particularly in Jerusalem, had put such a burden on the church that people were literally facing starvation if they didn't come up with some resources from somewhere. There had been literally thousands of believers in Jerusalem, and many of the ones who came and were saved at Pentecost didn't go home. They didn't have jobs there. They stayed to be a part of the family of God where they could have the fellowship. And while they're trying to find jobs, it's putting some pressure on the church. And you remember reading in the early chapters of Acts how people would sell off a piece of property and give it to the apostles, and the apostles would give it to the people who had the needs. So this was happening more in Jerusalem than anywhere else in the world. But then the persecution became so intense in Jerusalem that many were scattered out of that church. And they went to all of these places. They went to Antioch, and from there they sent out Paul and Barnabas. And so churches are now springing up all over the world, but there are still people in Jerusalem. The apostles stayed. People are still getting saved there. They've got a pretty good list of widows. We know from Acts 6. And so they can't get jobs because they're Christians. Persecution from the Jews is the most intense in Jerusalem. You know, the Gentiles didn't like this either, but the Jews were very, very aggressive. And so the people in the church were supporting each other. If they had money, they were giving that to the one who didn't have any money so that everybody got to eat until nobody had any money. They'd burned through all the property. They'd used up everybody's savings plans. They don't have anything. And so over time, the resources of that church had been depleted, and the need is still very great. And so some of the leaders determined to get support for these believers from the other churches around the world that God had established. And this money was going to be collected from each church that was willing to participate and would be sent to Jerusalem, and then the leadership in Jerusalem would distribute it as it was needed. Brothers and sisters in Christ were literally in danger of starvation. The need is tremendous. I mean, we're talking about a lot of money. And so the churches are banding together to help meet that need. And what Paul is asking the Corinthian church to do is the same thing that the churches in the Galatian region are doing, other churches are participating in. And he gives them some very specific suggestions about how this special offering ought to be handled. And from what Paul says in this chapter, we get a very important principle regarding stewardship. Look at verse 2. On the first day of the week, each of you is to put aside and save as he may prosper, so that no collections be made when I come. Now here's the principle. Giving is to be systematic and planned. Each of you is to put aside and save as he may prosper. In other words, giving is a discipline. Biblical giving is a discipline. It has to happen consistently over time, or it isn't going to amount to much. Needs aren't going to be met. Now, a tremendous amount of money was needed for this situation. And that always seems to be the case, doesn't it? If you've ever been in leadership in a church, you've ever been in leadership in any kind of ministry, you seem sometimes to just be overwhelmed with needs around you. You know, I think if we had 20 times what we have, we could send it out to missionaries we already know are godly and are in need. And we'd be out again. There's just always a need. There's always more than any one church can do, right? I mean, that's just how it is. And that's how these people had to have felt. There's always this need, and we've got our own needs, and that church in Jerusalem is bigger than our church. How are we going to be the ones to help them? And it always seems like the numbers are more than anybody has. You know, the needs are more than anybody has. But there is a way to deal with that reality, that seemingly ever-present reality of insurmountable opportunities that face every church that has ever existed, or that I've ever heard of anyway. There is a way to deal with that. There is an approach that works in the face of tremendous needs. There's an approach that God has always blessed. And that approach is for everybody to set aside a little and save it every week, little by little. I'm not saying, you know, as little as you can. I'm saying what you have seems like a little, but you set aside consistently every week over time. And when we all do that, there will be enough. If we have wisdom in what we support, there will be enough. We plan to do it. We do it a little bit at a time, consistently over time, and God always blesses that approach. Just out of what God has given us. Just what we want to do out of what God has given us. You got to be careful that the vast nature of the needs don't make you think that your little bit won't make a difference. You know, put some aside and save. The text says, as you prosper. Not out of what you don't have, not out of what you wish you had, but as you prosper, put some of it aside and save to give to these needs. And, you know, as God blesses you, you plan to use it some of it that way. And that approach works. Now, look at how Paul expected it to work. In verse 2, it says, so that no collections be made when I come. I mean, this is a big number we're talking about. We don't know what the number was, but we, you know, you can figure out what it's going to take to feed all of these people if they've already burned through all their own property and they're going to starve. It's going to be a lot of money. And yet, Paul is convinced that if everybody in the church will just be faithful the way God has prospered them, to set aside a little bit and save it every week, then by the time he gets to town, they'll have it and they won't have to make any big special push. There won't be any need to make a big deal because it'll already be there. If they'll just set a little aside every week and save it for this, no collection will even have to be made when he arrives. That's how giving has to work. That's how it always works well. This is an approach that God has always blessed. People that give a little bit here and there when the mood hits them don't usually wind up doing very much, but setting aside some every week as God prospers you works. And in time, that little bit adds up to a lot of money. And when your little bit is put with everybody else's little bit, it's a lot of money. You've probably seen this in life. Several years ago, I had a full-time secular job, and you know, I was in between churches, and we were struggling to get by, and I was working and thankful to have the work, and it wasn't any kind of a thing that anybody was getting rich in, but I worked with, I don't know, maybe 30 or 35 other guys, all of us doing the same thing, making about the same amount of money. And you know, I just kind of watch people anyway, and I'm watching some of these guys, and a couple of these guys in particular had a very different lifestyle from what we have and had at that time. A couple of them, you know, worked very hard, always at work, always on time, always stayed late when they were needed late, and made pretty good living doing this, and went home to live in squalor. While I tried to be on time, tried to work hard, made a pretty decent living doing what I was doing, and went home to a very nice house in a very nice neighborhood. And all of us were just eking by, but I'm eking by in a pretty nice house, and they're eking by in a bad neighborhood in a really small home. It's just a couple of the people there that I'm thinking about. And the only difference that I could see as I observed, okay, you know, their life and what we're trying to do and how we're trying to make pennies come together and get through this time. The only difference was that they smoked cigarettes and drank beer and I didn't. That was the only discernible difference that I could see in their lives. You know, they weren't extravagant in any way that I could see. And the cigarettes weren't much out of what they were making. You know, a pack of cigarettes at that time was a little less than $3. I don't know what the beer was, but it was more than the cigarettes, I'm sure. Depends on where you buy it, I guess. But a couple of beers a day isn't much expense out of what they were making, and a couple of packs of cigarettes a day wasn't much expense out of what they were making. But a little less than $3 a pack is $180 a month for cigarettes. Two packs a day. Nobody admits to more than that, by the way, ever. They say a pack and a half. I figure that's two or three, but it's just the human condition, right? So $180 a month for that, and say maybe another $220 for the beer, and you've got $400, which was about the difference in my house payment and their house payment. Nothing extravagant, no big thing anywhere, just a little bit every day. That's how money works. Little by little, it makes a big difference, for good or for bad. A lot can be accomplished with a little bit over time. Now, if we did this, and trust me, I'm not building up to anything. There's no special offering coming that I know of yet. Okay, so relax. These are illustrations. When I'm coming at you, I'll be direct, but I'm not coming at you right now. Okay, nothing I know of yet. I hadn't been informed if there's one coming. But let's just suppose this was going on. And, you know, we have friends that are starving, or we don't even know them, but they're Christians. They have a good testimony, and they're in danger of starvation. They're going to lose their homes, nothing to eat, they're going to be on the street, brothers and sisters in Christ. And so we're going to take up a special offering. And you think, well, I'm already supporting the church. And whatever more I could do, I can't make a difference in anybody's life. You know, I mean, come on, it's so little. But I want to do something. I wish I could do something. Well, let's say you decided to do what Paul says in verse 2. Just set aside a little bit every week. What would that do? Let's say you want to do that for missions. You want to do more for missions, but as far as you can tell, you're spending every penny in your paycheck. But you'd like to do more, but you don't want to take it out of one pocket and put it in another. You'd like to do more. What if you could do what Paul is saying here? Let's say you thought of something in your life you could do without that costs $1 a day. Soft drinks, biggie size, the combo, something that you could add it all up and say, okay, I'll quit doing that and I can take $1 a day for missions. Well, that isn't much. $365 a year, I mean, that's something, but that's not going to change the life of a missionary, right? But if you did that, if you're 21 years old and you're starting your career, and you did that every day for your working career, it would be $16,790. $1 a day before you retired. $1 a day. If 100 people did that, it would make not a difference in the life of one missionary, but several missionaries. Now, $1 a day is not a sacrifice. I'm not suggesting that's a sacrifice. I'm just showing you the power of being consistent. Paul is saying, the ones of you who want to, let everybody do this, and it'll work. And it'll work so well, when I get there, we won't have to blow any trumpets and try to get everybody in a pep rally to give some money. Just be consistent. Now, if that approach worked for an over and above offering gathered from poverty-stricken churches in the first century to support a bigger church in Jerusalem, it'll work today. Just do something as God prospers you. Paul is just suggesting a disciplined approach with everybody doing something out of what God gives them, everybody doing it because they want to. Planning and consistency. Now, in the book of 2 Corinthians, he comes back to the subject of this offering, and I want you to turn now over to that. 2 Corinthians chapter 8, beginning with verse 1. He still hasn't come to get the money. They haven't sent the money to Jerusalem. He's going to talk some more about this offering. 2 Corinthians chapter 8, we'll read verses 1 through 5. Now, brethren, we wish to make known to you the grace of God which has been given in the churches of Macedonia, that in a great ordeal of affliction, their abundance of joy and their deep poverty overflowed in the wealth of their liberality. For I testify that according to their ability and beyond their ability, they gave of their own accord, begging us with much urging for the favor of participation in the support of the saints. And this not as we had expected. But they first gave themselves to the Lord and to us by the will of God. Now in the verses that follow this, Paul challenges the Corinthians to jump in and do the same thing. And he gives a lot of specific challenges, but we'll leave that for another day. And for the rest of our time today, I want to focus in on this example of the churches in Macedonia that Paul refers to when he brings this offering up again. Same offering. Now, Macedonia is where Philippi is, or was, and so it would have been Philippi and surrounding churches. This is what they had done. A very poor area, at least for the Christians. Persecuted there. It wasn't just Jerusalem. But from their example, I want to show you three more principles of giving. The first is that faithful giving is a result of grace. We're not looking at just trying to get you to do something. This is a result of grace. In false religions, people give money, don't they? Sometimes staggering amounts of money. Golden angels on the roof, elaborate buildings, deaf, dumb, and blind idols, but made from the finest materials. I mean, people give money. It's not just about money. People who do not know the Lord give money for religious purposes. And that's not the answer to anything. But there's something different about biblical giving as done by a believer in Jesus Christ. And that is that there is a work of grace in our hearts that leads us to want to do this. It changes the how and why of our giving. We're not doing this to get into heaven because Jesus paid it all and he's taken care of that. We're not giving to be noticed by men because our Heavenly Father sees in secret and will reward us. When we give as we should, we're trusting God to do great things with it. We want to do it. We want a part in it. Even though our part may be small, we don't want to miss our part. And so we sacrifice because we actually want to do it. We prefer to do something to see that God is glorified, to be a part of this, to give a blessing. It's a work of grace when that happens. When people give that way, it's God. Being able to do that is a work of God in the human heart. And it's one of the reasons we never stoop here to trying to push you to do something. We'll let you know the need. Do what you want to do. Because if God's doing a work in your heart, then you'll do something. And if God isn't doing a work in your heart, I'm not going to shortcut that. This is a work of grace. And this is what Paul emphasizes in the first part of this passage. Look again at verse 1. Now, brethren, we wish to make known to you the grace of God which has been given in the churches of Macedonia. What did that grace look like? Well, verse 2 says that in a great ordeal of affliction, their abundance of joy and their deep poverty overflowed in the wealth of their liberality. In the middle of their own affliction and poverty, they're filled with abundance of joy, and this combination of joy and poverty produced liberality in them. Let me tell you, that's God if that happens. You have joy in poverty and it produces liberality. Yeah, that's a God thing. And yet this does happen. This is not even a rare thing. This is how Christians give. This isn't uncommon. This is how we're supposed to give. Because God still works this way. He still gives this grace. And you and I ought to want this grace. We're not to hear a lesson on the discipline of giving and say, all right, I'm going to do this because I should. No. You ought to do it because you want to. And you ought to expect this kind of grace to be poured out in your life. And if it isn't being poured out in your life, you ought to look at your life and go, why am I different from these Christians in the Bible? What's wrong? And you get on your face and stay there till God gives you this grace. Shows you what you need to deal with. If this is lacking, something is wrong. This grace is normal. This is the norm in Christian giving. And so there doesn't need to be any pressure or manipulation. There's no need for fundraising schemes. There's nothing for sale. There's no begging. It's just, here's the need. Do what you want to. But here's how to do it so it'll work. Put a little bit aside every week, and that'll work. No pressure. This should be joy overflowing in liberality. It can do that even in the face of great poverty. Look for God in this. If this grace isn't there, go to Him. Say, God, help me with this. I'm hung up on money and I need help. Let me give you another principle out of this one. So the first thing was, what'll work is a little bit set aside every week. And then it's grace when this happens the right way. The second principle in this passage, faithful givers are willing to sacrifice. Sacrifice. It's important wording in verses 3 and 4. It says, "For I testify that according to their ability and beyond their ability, they gave of their own accord, begging us with much urging for the favor of participation in the support of the saints." Now, I probably should have made this another point, but I'm making it at every point. This was of their own accord. Nobody's working this up. Nobody's pushing anybody real hard. I mean, they're being encouraged to do this, but there's no manipulation here. They did this because they wanted to do it. Verse 4 says they're actually begging for the opportunity to be a part of this. Now, these are poor churches. We know Philippi was a very poor church because of persecution that we read about in Acts 16. You know, the whole city was against the church. Nobody's hiring these guys. The hatred was intense. So in their abject poverty, they're still giving. They're saying, don't leave us out. With much urging, they're saying, you got to let us help with this. Now, some people might say to a church like the church at Philippi and the others in that same region, you guys have enough trouble of your own. Let some of the rich churches handle this one. I mean, there are still some wealthy people in some of the churches, and they can step up and meet this need. Don't hurt yourself, you know. Let somebody else do this one. I've known pastors who would tell people, you know, you don't need to do that. You don't need to do that. No. The church in Philippi didn't think that way. They're standing in line. They're saying, let us help. We have to be allowed to be a part of this. Now, I've seen this attitude in people who are fighting poverty. Down and out, hard luck, you know, just fixed incomes and older people, unemployment in younger people that's put them in a temporary but serious crunch. And they don't want to be left out. And it's like they're saying, look, I don't have much, okay? I don't get much pleasure out of what I do have because there's never enough to go very far. And so I don't have a lake house and I don't get to go play all the time. Don't take this away from me too. I want to have a part in this. There is a blessing in this, and I will not be denied my part in this blessing. I want to help with this. I want to. Now, that's what's coming through with the Macedonian churches. They're like, no, you're not leaving us out. Let us help with this. We want to be a part of this. They're urging. They want to sacrifice. Not just to give a tip, but to sacrifice. They see a blessing in this, and they don't want to be denied their part in it. Verse 4 just flies in the face of all the schemes to avoid getting Christians to give, begging us with much urging for the favor of participation in the support of the saints. We've seen this Lakeshore, Mississippi, building houses. Greg told me one story about these guys that came to help, you know, and they wanted a part in this. And what needed to be done that day was cleaning out a septic tank. Would you sign up for that job? Don't raise your hand. I'm not asking for a public testimony. Nobody wants that job. A couple of guys are doing that job. Somebody comes up to Greg and says, do you know those guys? Those are two of the wealthiest men in that particular state that they came from. And they came to help, and what needed to be done was get the lid off of that septic tank and get it pumped out. And these two multimillionaires said, all right, let's do it. That's the attitude here. I don't want to be left out of it. I want my part in that blessing. Well, let me give you one last point. This is part of that work of grace. But faithful givers give themselves first. Faithful givers give themselves first. Now, this is one of those key distinctions between biblical giving and the giving of false religions. Faithful givers are giving themselves unto God and unto other believers. Verse 5 says it. And this, not as we had expected, but they first gave themselves to the Lord and to us by the will of God Doesn't mean Paul expected worse. It's just that they went beyond his expectations. Doesn't mean he expected bad from them, but they went beyond it. It was better than we expected. They first gave themselves to the Lord and to us by the will of God. First, before what? Before the money. Lost people often give money instead of giving themselves. Sometimes they give money with great generosity to avoid having to give themselves. It's like they're negotiating with God. I'm not going to obey, but how about if I do this? I can write a big check. Will that help? I'm not going to give myself, but I've got some money and I'll do that and maybe that'll be good enough. You know, I'm trying to earn something from God. Sort of an attempt to negotiate. Sometimes Christians, I mean even real Christians, will decide that they'll support the church financially, but they're not going to really give themselves to the other Christians in the church. You know, they're in, but they're not all the way in, and where they hold back is letting us know them. These guys, they didn't have any of that going on. First, they gave themselves to the Lord and to the other Christians, and then they gave their money. And so in this case now, because this is a work of grace, the monetary gift is just an expression of who we are. We're not trying to work anything with the money. We want to do it. We're all in the same family. And we're not going to let our family starve. Even though we haven't met them, they're not starving. They're not if we can help it. We can eat less so they can eat enough to live. We'll do something. Don't leave us out. They gave themselves. They're in this thing wholeheartedly. Well, giving is God's normal way to support ministries. It's done consistently over time. And if it is done that way, great things can be accomplished. When people give the way the Bible says to, it's a work of grace. They want to give. They are willing to sacrifice. They overflow with joy and liberality, even if they're poor. And people who can give this way give themselves first to the Lord and to other Christians. Now, in the few minutes we have left, I want to let you speak up. Let me ask you a question. Why do you think Paul begins in 2 Corinthians 8 by telling these guys about what the Macedonians are doing? In the verses we didn't read yet, he's about to tell them about, you know, what they need to be doing. But why does he tell them this stuff about the Macedonians? What's the point of that, do you think? It's a way to glorify God. Yeah.
It confirms that again in Philippians 4, when Paul's talking to the Philippians about them giving it to Macedonia.
Mm-hmm. Larry, were you going to say something? There's power in a good example, isn't there? You know, I mean, it's not wrong to point out a good example. Sometimes we think, well, I can't say anything about what those other guys are doing. You know, we do need to be careful about making the wrong kind of comparisons, but a good example can encourage us a lot, and I think that's certainly part of this. Anything else come to mind while you bring these guys up, Greg? Yeah, I think that's a great point. And it may be that this was a wealthier church. I don't know for sure. I know they were fixed on wealth because of some of the things Paul hits on in these two books. I used to be in a church that had a lot of money, though, and everybody knew it. And we got everybody's requests for money all the time. And so it may be like instead of them thinking, well, we got the money and everybody wants ours, or it's just us, they're just coming after us, you know, this is how God is blessing the churches, and we don't want you to be left out is a good thing.
And the other thing is building relationships with other churches, getting to know them, having other brothers. There's a lot going on there. It's not just about money. But
that's right.
There's a growing of the body and helping support one another, but friendship, because that's what this is about. That's why it's relationships. It's a relationship with God. It's a relationship with other Christians.
Yeah. I think that's good. Now, how important do you think the need, the specific need in this case, is when somebody comes and makes an appeal like this, or makes any kind of specific appeal in a church? How important is the nature of that need? What's the significance of that? I think there's an integrity issue here with the leadership. If there isn't a real need and somebody's always trying to get your money, watch out. I think the need is significant. I was at a conference one time where they made this strong appeal. You know, it was a free conference, but they had offerings, and they made this really strong appeal that this town has to help because the other towns that we go to don't have enough money for the keep this conference going. And so, you know, do what you can do. And we'll announce how much we've got. And I'm going, okay. Well, after the first offering, they had exceeded the need that they had announced. And so they came back and said, this was the leader of this organization, the Bible never says that your giving is to be based on need, but you're just to give with liberality and just trust. And, you know, he realized he had set his goal too low, and he starts working us for more. But when he said the Bible never teaches in any way that your giving is to be based on need, I left and have never been back to that conference because he was wrong. It's not just to get your money. The point's not about the money. And so we see this consistently in the Bible. There's a real need, and oftentimes there's a real need, and they're just going to God. That's what Paul was doing. They just go to God, and I'll make tents if I need to. Then there are other times when they announce, here's the need. Is it 2 John or 3 John where, you know, support such men? Make sure they go out well done. You know, they say, here's what they need. They're going out, they're doing a good work. We need to support them. But then that's all they do, and people give. They're not just working it to get more money all the time. So there is an integrity in the leadership issue throughout these texts. We'll get into more of that next time, too. What do you think the significance of their giving beyond their ability is in 2 Corinthians 8:3? According to their ability and beyond their ability, they gave of their own accord. What's going on there when you give more than you can afford to give? Is that Paul's talking about that like it's a good thing. What's up with that? Trust.
God's always given the most.
Yeah.
I think a real contentment that knowing that God's going to supply their needs and they addressing all these things to the Corinthians that they need to be doing, and to the Philippians, he's saying, your gifts are good, but I'm content with whatever I have, but your gifts are good. It's a blessing to you that you're giving.
Yeah. It's interesting to me, here are poor people who would be criticized by many for giving something they couldn't afford to give, because that's what this has to mean. Gave beyond their ability. And in America, the people who are critical of that have made that decision for a better car, for a better house, for better furniture. We can't really afford it, but we know we'll be making more next year when I get my raise. Then I'll be affording this house. And so we're going to stretch for the house. We're going to stretch for the car. These guys are stretching like that to give. They're trusting that God is going to provide. Or the priority is so high that they're willing to do without something that most people would consider very basic. Sometimes people skip meals to be able to give. That would be in this category of more than you can afford, I think. Okay, if we don't eat on Tuesdays and we miss lunch on Thursday and Saturday, we can do this. That's how big a priority this is for them. So there's something very significant in this attitude that they wanted to that badly, and that's why this works. Gary? Yeah, that's right. It does. And to see the strength of it, they're willing to hurt themselves to give. It's not somebody standing over them saying, you ought to give that boat. You got jewelry on, you could put that in the plate. No, it's not that. They're doing something because they want to. And Paul is glorifying God because their commitment to help was that high. They did it because they wanted to. Of their own accord. And that's what I just keep coming back to. You don't have to push this. Just hold up that option, point them toward God, and God's people will give. That's all you need. That really encourages me that with so much of our church life yet to come, and everything that we look at being next, we go, oh my, what a lot of money that is. And yet God provides through his people. He does. We can take great comfort in that and trust him. And when we participate in that, we can overflow with this kind of joy and glorify him the more. Well, we'll do more out of 2 Corinthians 8 next time. Let me close this with prayer because I'm way over.